And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, February the 23rd, 2017, 12:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you cannot beat the weather today. An amazingly beautiful February day here in the state of Ohio. I want to let you know what's coming up on the rest of the program today before we get to our first guest, because we are going to concentrate today a lot on the Marion community. Coming up in hour number two at 1:15, we're going to be joined by the president of the Marion Community Foundation, Dean Jacob, who is going to come in, fill us in on the Community Foundation, the brand new Marion Made program, which was rolled out on Valentine's Day, February 14th, and also talk about the Cardinal initiative. That is coming here to Marion, kind of explain that as well as the Marion Made program, and just fill us in on what's going on here in Marion, Ohio. The last 10 minutes of this hour, we're going to be joined by B.J. Gruber, a police officer here in Marion, who you have probably seen on the national news in the last few days. It's an interesting story. B.J. will tell it to us exactly how it all went down. But essentially, a student here in Marion Facebooked the police department for help with their homework, and BJ answered, and that got picked up by the national news, so he has been on the NBC Nightly News, and in the Marion Star, and on Headline News, and just about every place you can think of in the last few days, and today he'll be here at about 10 of 1, so you're not going to want to miss that, BJ Gruber coming up today. But we're going to kick off the program, because as many of you know, on Monday, President's Day, there was an event held at the Harding home here in Marion, the home of President Warren G. Harding, that got some national attention. People called it a protest. Representative Jim Jordan was speaking there on behalf of President's Day, and ended up some questions were taking. Some comments were going down. According to the Marion Star and some other sources, about 200 people turned out. So we're very happy to be joined by Representative Jim Jordan to kind of discuss what happened there and where we go from here and what's going on in Marion. So we're glad to welcome to these microphones Representative Jordan. Representative Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Good to be with you today.
Yeah, good to speak with you. You know, I was not sure about this, Representative Jordan, but what was the event supposed to be on Monday?
We were just stopping by to see the Harding home and talk with the folks there. And then we were headed up to the Hayes Center in Fremont, where they have all kinds of information on former President Hayes. We did an event up there with some students. We're stopping at to see the home. They're in the process of raising money to renovate it and put it back to it more of what it looked like in the day that the president was there. So stopped by, and then we had, like as you said, a number of folks show up who wanted to talk, and so we spent 45 minutes talking with all kinds of folks about the Affordable Care Act. But it was a great day, you know, and God bless those people. We have this wonderful thing in America called the First Amendment. We got to see the First Amendment in action and democracy in action, which is something that I think is great for the country.
By all estimations, like I say, the Marion Star, I think, had it at 200 people. When you pulled up, just thinking this was going to be an event to see the Harding home, and there were people out there with signs, which is something I can say that I haven't seen in my news career in Marion, Ohio. What'd you think when you saw that?
Well, no, we knew they were coming. They had said that they had talked about it online, and of course they had notified press, and press had talked to us, and we had people from the CNN and the Washington Post there, so we knew it was coming. In fact, what we tried to do was our staff had noticed that the folks who were organizing the protest had stated they were going to first meet at the library. So we thought, well, we got into town a little early, so we thought, well, we'd go over to the library and talk from there. So we went there. But most of them, I think, probably because it was such a beautiful day, they said, well, we'll just head right over to the Harding home and hang out outside because it was like 50 degrees and, kind of the weather we're having today. We tried to meet with them. We thought we could have a better dialogue in the library where there wouldn't be all the shouting. But they wanted to, they chose not to do that. So we met them at the home, and they had a lot of shouting, but we still had, I think, a good discussion. And I took questions from a bunch of them for, like I said, for about 45 minutes.
Yeah, my understanding was that I was not there, but from reading the paper and reading some other accounts, that Sherry Hall, the curator there at the home, had come out, and there were some shouts of stop reading and hold a town hall, I think, directed at you.
Yeah,
Do you feel it turned out in the end? Where would you put it?
Oh, I think it was, it's great. You know, people, look, this is the way America works, and if you disagree, you're allowed to come out and protest and voice your concern. I was the one thing that did disappoint me is that when they wouldn't let Sherry finish her remarks. Here's a lady who has worked so hard and done a great job with the Harding home, who talked about some of the history. I mean, the irony was, 97 years ago on that same front porch, there was another member of Congress who was talking with literally hundreds of thousands of people over a 3-month time period in that campaign, and there we were, you know, here almost 100 years later on the same front porch talking with people about public policy. So I think that was good, but unfortunately we didn't get to talk that much because there was so much shouting, and particularly what bothered me was the shouting at towards Sherry, because she opened her home up. It was the home up. She was our host, and I was disappointed in how folks treated her. But as far as yelling at me and all that, that's fine. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be, and I had no problem with that either. And you know, like I said, we took the questions and we had a discussion. But a lot of times, all they wanted to do was yell.
That being said, you say the tenor of this cover, the Affordable Care Act. Why do you why do you think people are so passionate about this right now that this event would happen this way?
Well, I mean, because there's going to be a change, and there needs to be a change. I mean, as I said to the group on Monday, I think everyone understands where I stand on the issue, because I've communicated, I think, very, that I think this law is not good for the country. And I start from the premise healthcare gets better and costs less when Obamacare is gone. We told the voters we were going to repeal it all, and that we were going to replace it with a model that actually empowers people, empowers families, and gets back to a market. That to me is exactly what our legislation that we introduced last week does. We conservatives introduced it. It repeals it and it replaces it with a family-centered, market-centered approach. Everyone knows that's where I stand, and so we talked about that yesterday and said it shouldn't come as a surprise. And frankly, the vast majority of the voters in the 4th District supported that position in the last election.
Why do you think it is that people seem to be confused on what it's going to be replaced with? I was even hearing yesterday that President Trump says he's going to roll out the replacement plan in March. So the replacement plan, I guess, that we are going to get really has not been well defined for the people. Do you think that you have a plan? A lot of people
have. No, ours is well defined. We're the only one to put a plan out there. We put it out last week. It's sponsored by Dr. Paul, Senator Rand Paul, on the Senate, and Congressman Mark Sanford in the House, and it was endorsed by the House Freedom Caucus, our conservative group in the House of Representatives. And it said repeal Obamacare, just like we put on President Obama's desk a year and a half ago. Do the exact same legislation, put the same thing on President Trump's desk that we put on President Obama's desk, and then the replacement bill is one that encourages a marketplace to actually form and encourages, it says, let's expand health savings accounts, let's allow the purchase of insurance across state lines, let's allow greater association health plans to form, let's block grant Medicaid back to the states, let states run it. It does the things that are actually going to bring down the cost of insurance, which is the biggest problem we have right now in the health in the healthcare market.
The thing that people seem to be worried about in this particular town hall in the city of Marion, and in town halls I've seen all over the country really as of late, is the two things about Obamacare that people do seem to like is you can stay on your parents' insurance until you're 26, and the pre-existing condition clause being gone where you could be denied. Does your plan, along with Rand Paul, include those provisions?
Our plan, look, I'm certainly in favor of people being able to stay on their plans, but I don't think you need a mandate from Washington to accomplish that. I actually think if there's a big demand from the consumer, then the marketplace will have plans that offer that. Do we really need a bunch of politicians in Washington and bureaucrats in Washington say, oh, here's how the insurance, every plan should have this in it? I don't think so. I think if there's a big demand from families and from Americans, that insurance companies will say, we're going to offer this product. What's what we have in America today is we have forgotten what a marketplace looks like in healthcare, because we've had so much government involvement. There's no price transparency. There's no real market. What our approach does is get us back to a market. And when you get back to a market, then you're going to have lower insurance costs. Right now, so many working families and middle-class families can't afford their health insurance. And if they can't afford it, they can't afford the deductible. And they can't. And there's no encouragement to have a health savings account, which allows them to put pre-tax dollars in an account that will build up and help them deal with that deductible and help them deal with the cost of their premiums over time. So that's the problem with Obamacare. The plan we have offered is a plan that's going to bring back lower cost insurance, which is exactly what the market needs.
I think certainly people would agree with lower cost, and defining a plan is very good. But I guess the question would be, is if you currently have an illness, whether it be diabetes or something catastrophic like cancer, and you are on Obamacare, and that goes away, what do you do? Does your plan cover that?
Yeah, if you have insurance, well, what we say, if you're buying insurance right now, you can't be kicked off insurance. You can't let insurance companies say, oh, you got a tough illness in your family now, we're no longer going to insure you. So our plan rewards responsible behavior. It says if you've had insurance, you're not going to be kicked off if you change job or something bad happens to your family. But what we also can't have is the perverse incentive that now exists in Obamacare, which basically says, the best way to think of this is like, you can't go buy homeowner's insurance after your house is on fire, right? You can't do that. But right now under Obamacare, you can do that. It says insurance, there's guaranteed, the mandate is guaranteed issue. So you get something bad happens, you never had insurance, then you go to the insurance company, you have to insure me now. Well, all that means is that model drives up the cost for everyone and makes insurance unaffordable for working class and middle class families. So we say, yeah, if you got insurance, you keep it. We're going to have a 2-year phase-in process. But we also say, look, you can't expect to never get insurance, and then when something bad happens to you or your family, go to the insurance company and suddenly you get coverage. That's our plan.
What do those people do, though? Because there would be a lot of people, I think, even in this district, who that might happen to. If you're feeling good, you don't have insurance, and then one day you go in and, God forbid, you're diagnosed with cancer or diabetes, you can't just roll into a ball and go away. What do those people do?
We have, if they can't afford insurance at that time, we have, you got to think of it this way, Scott. Look what's happened to price under Obamacare, the price of insurance. So tell me how that's good for that same family you described or for all families. And that's what we're trying to avoid. Right now, I mean, if you're in the individual market, I know of a person in the individual market where their insurance was, they're healthy 27-year-old and their insurance costs $500 a month for a $6,000 deductible. That's crazy. 27-year-old healthy individual. Why is it so expensive? Because of everything we've just talked about. And until you change that model, you're not going to bring down the cost where people can actually afford insurance. So you're right. Right now, there's someone who says, I'm 27, healthy, has a job, but he doesn't get his insurance through his employer, has a good job. And he's saying, I got to pay $500 a month for a $6,000 deductible. He makes the decision not to get insurance because it's so expensive. So what you have to bring back is lower cost insurance so that he can afford it and he can buy a catastrophic plan, pay $100, $150 a month, and put some money away in a health savings account. That's the kind of model you got to get back to, and that's what our plan puts in place.
I certainly understand cost, and I'm not disagreeing with you on that at all. But I guess that's not the question I ask. Under your plan, if you don't carry insurance, and you're a healthy 35-year-old guy or girl in this district, and you go out and Obamacare's gone, and you find out, God forbid, worst of worst scenarios, you're diagnosed with some form of cancer. What do you do?
Well, in America, no one is denied care, so that individual get care. And what our plan says is there's a 2-year phase-in where we let everyone know that this is how the model is going to work in the future. So that person is always going to get care, and there's going to be a 2-year time frame when they will know that they need to get ready for the market that's coming, a 2-year time frame to actually lower costs. So we believe that same person will say, over that time period, we'll see costs come down and we'll have insurance. They won't be in the situation you just described. That's the beauty of our legislation.
And the people, just to make sure, because I think it's an important point, the people who have a pre-existing condition today, whether it be diabetes or cancer or whatever it is, will be covered under your plan when Obamacare goes away.
If they got insurance, they can't be kicked off.
Okay. So that being said, what if your plan is not the plan adopted by Congress or President Trump?
Well, I'm not going to get into the hypotheticals, because right now we're pushing for our plan. We think it's the right thing for families, the right thing for the country, the right thing for our budget, our huge debt problem. We think it's the right approach. So that's what we're pushing for right now. And we'll see how the debate plays out.
For people in this district, I guess let me ask it this way. For people in this district, I know you want your plan. You've described your plan, and you're certainly entitled to that. And there probably are a lot of people in this district who like that plan. If that plan is not the one that's going through, and that's a hypothetical, but what is not a hypothetical is if there is another plan put out there by somebody else, and there are other plans put out there, will you vote for a plan that does not include coverage for the people who are currently have pre-existing conditions?
You got to see what's in the legislation. We don't know. Frankly, no one else, the leadership, House leadership, hasn't put out their plan. We don't know what's being talked about. I have problems with, because they're talking about an advanced refundable tax credit, which is a whole new entitlement. They're talking about keeping the Medicaid expansion, which is a big cost, and they're talking about keeping some of the tax increases that were in the new taxes that were in Obamacare. They're talking about keeping some of those. So if that's the plan, I think I'll probably have, I know I have big concerns with that. So it depends on what it looks like.
Do you think that the main fear that's bringing these people out is the fact that they fear they're going to lose their health insurance? I guess that's why I asked the question. If a plan comes about, and I understand we have to look at each bill individually, if a bill comes about that does not include the safety net, the two-year safety net for people who are already having insurance with pre-existing conditions, if it doesn't include that, that's one thing. That's a very important thing that's in your bill. If it doesn't include that, would you vote for it?
Well, I don't think there's going to be any plan that doesn't include that. So again, we'll have to see, because it depends on a host of other factors. Is there a big tax increase going on? Is it going to drive up the cost of the debt? I mean, there's lots of things you got to look at. So it's hard to say, but I don't think any plan won't include this idea that I call it being rewarding responsible behavior. People who've done the right thing and have insurance should not be kicked off because they get a tough illness in their family. I mean, that just is. You're flat out wrong in my judgment. So I find it hard that any proposal won't include that. Okay. Scott, I got to run here. I got to run into this, talk to some students.
Okay, well, final question I want to ask you. Would you come back to Marion sometime and have a town hall about this?
I come back all the time. I do hundreds of meetings around our district every year. And so, I get to Marion all the time, and I've had the privilege of representing that fine area for a number of years. So we'll be back to Marion, I'm sure, in the very near future.
Okay.
Got to run here to this meeting. Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Representative Jim Jordan, and I guess you can take that as you like. We are going to take a break here and come back with our next guest. Don't you dare go away. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 12:10 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have more edges to them, more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean, most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 12:10 to 2 p.m. right here on WGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com.
Hey, Scott Spears back with you here, 36 minutes past the hour on this February 23rd, 2017. Joined now by one of my favorite people. He's a regular guest on this program. We last visited late last year. He is the world's foremost mentalist, just an all-around great guy, the amazing Kreskin. Kreskin, how are you?
Scott, I'm fine. This is a very difficult time the past few hours, and I'm going to share it with your listeners because I'm sure on television they've seen the gentleman, but I just learned a few hours ago that a person whom I've known for 30 years in the business, Alan Combs, has passed away. And Alan Combs was a news broadcaster for years on Fox, but also on radio stations, ABC, CBS, and we've known each other for 30 years, and really one of my closest friends in the industry, and I can't even know everyone, we're all talking about it because he, you know, and you would understand this because you're obviously a warm-hearted person, very much so, and he was very generous and kind. Not everybody may have agreed with his very extremely liberal leanings, but he was absolutely one of the most remarkable feeling persons you could imagine, because he sympathized with everyone he ever talked to and interviewed. And ironically enough, I was on with him this year, January the 13th, and while I actually confidentially I was put to I had to keep it completely confident, he explained to me when we were off the air, I was on for an hour with him, and we were off the air that night, how terminally ill he was and how concerned he was about his wife, Jocelyn, who's a professor. But, you know, on the air, you would have never known it. It's a very, it's a very sad loss for all of us who knew him. But, and I just want to give you an idea of how special and how considerate he was of me. He believed very much in my work. In fact, the last show I did, as I said last January, I did a mental test with him on the air, which I had never done on a broadcast anywhere and only started doing a month or so ago. I had someone in his crew take a deck of cards and pick one card unbeknownst to anybody and place it reversed in a deck, and nobody knew the card except this gentleman. And believe it or not, on the air, after about 2 or 3 minutes of mental exercise, what have you, Alan comes up with the name of a card, and it was the very same card. So the rest of the half hour, that's all we talked about. He says, Kreskin, I've worked with you for years. What is this ability you have to transmit thoughts in this way? But, you know, the special memory, and you will very much appreciate this. I know you will, Scott. Some 30 years ago, he was on ABC, and he was on all night, and a nighttime show. And he was going off for some reason one night or a couple nights, and he called me and he says, Kreskin, I want you to take over the show. I think you can handle this. And Scott, I've never been on the air, you know, by my stuff for that length of time, what have you. So you can imagine, and you appreciate this, and the listeners, you'll understand my expression of this. Imagine my walking into the studio, it's a little before 12 midnight, sitting down at a desk, and there is a microphone in front of me, and the producer, the production room is right behind me. I mean, they're not in the room with me, but they're behind me and what have you. And I look at the clock, and it now shows 2 minutes past midnight. In about three minutes, I'm going on the air. The light goes on. I'm on the air, and I suddenly realize that I have now 4 minutes and 55 more minutes to fill. That's for a person that's not done that. You can sympathize with me, Scott. That was a challenging experience, but the trust that he put made it was very special to me, if you can understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And we certainly will remember Alan Colmes very well. Kreskin, I we're on limited time, so I want to get to the reason.
Oh,
No. I'm glad
you... I could not ignore this, you know.
No. I'm glad you did, because he was a tremendous broadcaster. Ran into him at the Republican convention last July, so I'm sorry to hear of his passing.
Wow.
But there was a professor... who you are having a little bit of an issue with.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Scott, I'm so glad you called about this, because, you know, I predicted the last four presidential elections in the case we talked about it the last time I was on, and of course, you know about the one, the most recent one where they found out that a year before in December of 2015, I had on a radio, on a TV show in a local city, unconsciously said who was going to win the presidency. You know, so that was 11 months before. But this gentleman comes along, Professor, his name is Feynman, and he's a historian and a professor at Florida Atlantic University, an author and what have you, and he has expressed. Evidently, he's something of a prophet. I don't know if he's a fortune teller, crystal gazer, whatever you want to call him. I don't know. But he expressed the statement that he felt there's a very good chance he believes that Donald Trump's presidency will max out somewhere between 31 and 199 days. And, Scott, you're aware of we've had a couple of presidents who only were present for that short amount of time, because Harrison had pneumonia, President Harrison had pneumonia, and around the 32nd or so day he was in office, he passed away. And the shortest after that was Garfield, and he died in his 200th day in office, because he'd been shot 2 months after his inauguration and survived until the 200th day where he passed away. So to say that he has this very strong prediction that that Trump is going to be the second shortest length of anyone in presidency is to me. Well, let me describe how I feel about this. First of all, Scott, if I felt this way, and you know me well enough, I would have never been so irresponsible as to make such a statement public. I don't know what there would have been to gain from it, except opening a damn Pandora's box with all the guns around to screwballs who feel that they're going to maybe fulfill destiny and find an excuse. I mean, I wonder about the wisdom, the brilliance, and the common sense of a human being who would make such a prediction. By the way, I have a prediction to make. I have two predictions to make. One is, I predict he's wrong. I predict he's wrong. That I don't care what folks. I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, or what have you. We're American people. I predict he's wrong in saying that his office that it's going to be shorter than as we said a moment ago. But I also say he's very, very wrong in making such a prediction, because God forbid an evil calamity takes place, interfering with the length of Trump's 4-year term in office. If I had made such a prediction, I would consider myself asinine, stupid, imbecilic, cold-blooded, and ignorant of my public responsibilities. Other than that, I have sympathy with this prognosticator.
You know, Kreskin, it's interesting. One of the reasons this story caught my eye is because we have had Dr. Feynman on. And I asked him about this, because he had made this prediction about a week ago, I think it's been two weeks ago, maybe. And one of the things he said was, this is based on President Trump's mental health, that he believes that the 25th Amendment, that Pence or McConnell or Ryan will invoke the 25th Amendment. He believes that's why he won't serve for that period of time.
Well, you know something? It is interesting that Professor Feynman, I would feel uncomfortable if I were a student in his classroom, but it's interesting that he's not only an author, a historian, a prophet, but also a psychologist and psychiatrist. Because while others may imply that that's what excuse they're going to use to dethrone a president and so forth, to play part of this, I think is stupid, asinine, and extraordinarily irresponsible. And if any of you listening to me are studying under him, keep that in mind when he gives you other pronouncements about public life and public figures and so forth. You don't fool around with something like that. One other person whose name I will not, and by the way, I'm going to tell you something. You have never heard me, Scott, express such anger and fury, because I'm in the business all my life. I'm 82 years old. I've flown over 3 million miles. I have a schedule that has me now booked in, till 2018 and what have you, unless, God forbid, that Professor Feynman finds something else. Maybe he's fooling around with some coins or a Ouija board and sees something about Kreskin. But I won't worry about whatever he says. No, I think there's a larger picture to this. I realize it gives a person a chance to be in broadcasts and to have public attention, because that's what people are savoring today. I am sure he didn't make this statement because he's thirsty for public attention. No, he's too modest a person. And if I sound sarcastic, it's because, God forbid, anything ever happens. How can a person live with themselves anymore, even if they were in another part of the world when it took place? Do you hear what I'm saying, Scott?
I do, and I appreciate the sentiment. I think it's a very interesting conversation to have. And God forbid, and that's what the doctor said as well. I can't misrepresent what he said. He said, God forbid anything would happen to President Trump. He doesn't want that to happen.
Oh, no. You know what? You know something? I want to stop for a moment. I'd like to say that as a totally sincere remark. But you don't play around with something like that and say, God forbid something happens, when in some indirect way you may contribute to the scenario. Oh, no. I know the games people play. I've been in this business a long, long time. A man, by the way, like Alan Combs. Too much responsibility as a public broadcaster, as a commentator, who had very, very strong feelings, but would never, ever make something, a statement like this. I don't think, and I'm not going to belabor it, I don't think there's much more I can say to this, but I warn other broadcasters, and I've talked to other broadcasters and say, oh my God, Kreskin, in this day and age with the violence, the common shooting of people and everything else, I wouldn't even think of toying around with such a remark. End of commentary there.
I certainly, Kreskin, I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your opinion. I think it's important to have both sides of the coin here addressed. And again, I thank you for coming on today, making time as always. It's always
and,
a pleasure.
We'll, listen, we'll be talking in the future because there are so many other areas I'd like to talk about. In fact, the next time I talk to you, I'd like to talk about the animal world. I have such a love of animals, and I have a little bit of warning for people adopting animals and so forth, because we want to protect them. But that's another story.
Absolutely.
Is that not a good cliffhanger, Scott? Is that
that's a good cliffhanger. That's almost as good as a soap opera, Kreskin. That was pretty good. Hey, thank you,
Scott,
so much.
Please, Scott, in the spirit of broadcasting, as I say to you every time we talk, we won't say goodbye. We're going to say to be continued, okay?
To be continued, Kreskin. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Thank you.
Bye-bye. The amazing Kreskin. We thank him for coming on, as always. And we're going to continue on this afternoon. A lot of attention lately has been focused in on Marion, Ohio. And one of the reasons has to do with a student in school here who reached out to the police department for some help with their homework. And BJ Gruber was the man who answered the call, and we are so glad to have him here today. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of time in what I'm sure has been a very busy few days. Yeah, just kind of turn that toward you.
My pleasure, Scott. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Tell us this story. What happened?
So, you know, the the unit or the that I supervise is what's called the Impact Bureau, which is Marion Police and Community Together. So that really encompasses all of our outreach programs, the school resource officers, things like that. But a big part of that job is also the social media piece. So that's something that actually keeps me very busy. We have about 14,000 followers. So for a community of, 35,000, that's actually pretty good following that we have there. I had a lot of work to get done. We'd had quite a busy day Friday with visiting some nursing homes and things like that. So I just happened to be, working at like 3 o'clock in the morning when I happened to bounce over and see that we had a messenger message that came through from, ended up being a 10-year-old girl. At the time, you really couldn't tell. For those of you that are familiar with Messenger, you get like a little, like a pea-sized picture of whoever the person is you're dealing with. But it would just said, I'm having trouble with my homework. Can you help? So I responded, what's up? And really kind of evolved over the course of probably about 18 hours, because I went to bed, she probably went to sleep. We wake up the next day and kind of exchange messages over the period of a few hours. But the first one I helped her out with pretty solidly. The second one I struggled with and gave her the wrong answer. So I've been so kindly reminded by so many of the PEMDAS since. So I certainly a lesson that I won't forget anytime soon.
Now, what a lot of people would have just said, I'm busy. I can't do this right now. Here might be some good sources to ask your teacher. Mm-hmm. What made you just decide to jump right in?
I guess, first and foremost, I'm a father of four. My kids range from college down to elementary school. And the way that I've described this to other people is it wasn't a jaw-dropping experience to me. It wasn't as though, what does this kid think they're doing asking me something like this? To me, it's a 21st century version of policing. If a kid walked up to me, in the years before internet and said, officer, can you help me with something? I would say, sure, what can I do? That has permeated into cyberspace now and into the internet. So if a kid is up for whatever reason at that hour and has a question that we can be helpful with, then I don't see why we shouldn't do that. And it's so funny, and I've explained this to other people. I said, in the course of 20 some years, I was in charge of the drug task force for a while and the SWAT team for 7 or 8 years. And in your career, you feel like you do all these fascinating, the stuff you see on TV, right? And a lot of times those moments that you think are the biggest in your career just kind of go unnoticed, maybe by not just the news media, but even internally within the police department. And so it's just so, it's so cool in a lot of ways to really see that people connect with something somehow. I mean, in my mind, I feel like I've done something like this probably 3,000 times and no one's ever, and it's just that one time that it really connects with people and it catches fire and it takes off. And it's been cool, mainly because the story's cute and what transpired, I think, is neat. But it's really given us a platform on a national level to talk about all of the things that we do. And that's been the real true blessing out of this. I mean, we got to go to DC last year, 2 months into creating this program. And even with that, I think we got a little attention maybe from Columbus News Media and things like that, but really nothing bigger than that. And then it's something like this, something like this then that just catapults it to a whole nother level and having an opportunity to get on multiple, whether it's print, whether it's TV, whether it's radio like this today, and telling our story about the things that we do. It's just been it's been a blessing, man.
How did it go from Friday when the event happened to the NBC Nightly News?
Well, so this our conversation surrounding math probably evolved through Saturday-ish. I would assume that sometime on Saturday night, either maybe early Sunday, I think Lena had explained to her mom that what she'd done, that she basically asked for help, and I don't think mom believed her, so mom got on and looked at the conversation and thought, well, sure enough, she did ask the police for help. So mom screenshotted the conversation and posted it, and so by late, I did see the post, and I liked it and all that stuff, and so later on Sunday, Lena had messaged into our account again and said, hey, did you see that thing that my mom, put, it's been shared like 500 times, and I'm thinking like, wow, that's pretty impressive, because we've had some pretty big posts, but that's a lot of shares. So you know, next thing I know is, you know, we're kind of getting calls from different media outlets who picked up on it. And then when one did, more did. I mean, literally, so this is Thursday now. Tuesday was probably my busiest day. I mean, at one point I was literally on the phone with USA Today and typing out an email interview with BBC at the same time. And then just interviews. I probably did 30 some, I would say, over the course of the last couple of days, including all three major networks. And, you know, so it's been unbelievable. It's really been a cool experience. And I had shared with someone else the other day as well. I said it was kind of interesting that in my 20 plus years, and quite a few of those have been doing like public information officer type positions, you know, dealing with the media, that I really don't know that I've ever had a national media story before. And it was just so interesting that it would happen that I kind of had two in the same day, and they were both unrelated, because in the midst of all of these other things going on with this young lady, someone emailed me a picture, said, "Hey, look, you were in the Washington Post today." So, and that was in regards to Congressman Jordan coming in town and getting a photograph as I was standing on the front steps of the Harding home with him. So it was quite an interesting situation, to say the least.
It's interesting because we started the program today with Congressman Jordan.
Okay.
How do you think that went that day? What was your take?
Well, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, first of all, we have to be neutral. And that's what we always explain to our people. You know, you're entitled to political beliefs and views and thoughts. And all of those get checked at the door when you go work an event like that. I mean, we're not there to be political in any regard. We're there to be neutral. We're there to be peacekeepers, and that was our mission, and that's what we did. With that being said, you know, we don't get to work these events, fortunately, like a city the size of Columbus or so forth would that have protests more frequently. So we have a blessing in that regard. So we polished up our guys and kind of let them know, you know, what to expect and understanding what the legal rights were, you know, how brush up on the First Amendment that we all have rights to, you know, and then what steps outside of that. And there's always that anticipation that it's going to somehow evolve into what you see on, you know, the nightly news when the ugly becomes the ugliest that it can possibly be. So first and foremost, I would say that people on both sides of those issues, I found to be enormously respectful to our law enforcement that were there, and I'm deeply appreciative of that. I think sometimes that gets blown out of proportion, or it can, in some instances. So everyone there, so many people on both sides of that issue thanked us for our service, and we're respectful. Outside of that, what it appeared to me from a layperson's perspective standing there watching is a bunch of people who came with their own ideas shouting at each other, and there was no real discussion or evolution of thought in any regard. But I guess that's America, right? We have the ability to all stand and shout at each other without listening. And that's what it kind of felt like a little bit, just standing there listening to it. You know, again, I give the people credit there, because I really didn't hear even any foul language used of any type. I didn't hear really even any personal attacks of the people that showed up to protest. And I give the congressman credit that, you know, the group of people he had immediately in front of him that he could have certainly easily pulled questions randomly from the people right in the front that were there to support him. I mean, he went right at the people that were protesting and said, "I want to get to your questions." And he asked. So again, you know, we don't always like the answers in our political process. But to me, as a layperson, again, I watched our process unfold. And for better or for worse, it's better than any other country has, as far as I'm concerned.
When you look back at this week, 10 years from now, where do you think you will put it in regard to this story? You do so many things that are dangerous. You do things that are important for people to keep us all safe. And this is a great story. Where do you put this in your career?
Oh, this I think this will definitely be right up there, because this program is built through a lot of different things. You know, the benevolence of our community, it's built through the trust that the mayor and the chief place in me to do this job. And I'm given a lot of latitude to do that. And a lot of this is, it's an emotional investment for me. So it's not just I come here, punch a time card, and check out. It is more than that. As you can see by me answering a 10-year-old girl at 1:30 in the morning on a night where I'm not getting paid to work, that's just what I do. So at the end of the day, I think this is going to be a big piece of it. I mean, I'm on the downhill slide now. I could go in 5 years. I'll probably stick around a little bit longer than that. As I had shared with a group earlier this week, at the end of that day on Tuesday, when I rolled into my garage, I literally rolled in and I had the house to myself and just kind of broke down. And it was just a culmination of all of these things and the emotion and the investment that you put into it, and kind of this sense that it had finally been, it's almost like a painter and you have all these great creations and finally someone admires it, you know. It reached that level to where I felt like the programs that we're offering here were so innovative, so forward-thinking, and so critical to the problems that so many communities face today, that I felt like it deserved that kind of attention. So it was just kind of that buildup and that momentum that, you know, we finally landed this where it deserved to be.
With about a minute left, because I know you're so busy during this week, and I want to have you back because I want to talk about things that are going on with the police force at some point. What is the best part of this whole thing? What was the best moment in this whole thing since Friday?
The single best moment, I think having lunch with her, because at the end of it, you know, all this stuff was cool and for all of the reasons I've already explained, but that was really what it was all about. It was about a communication between a police officer that was helping a little girl, and it was cool to her that we've had lunch, and she's messaged me a couple times since then and said as much. So back to the core of what it was, I think I would have to say that was probably the highlight of the week for me.
And now, do you expect some more homework questions now coming in?
We've gotten some. And I've got everything from master's thesis to help me with my taxes to, and we have to politely say, have a good day.
That's funny. BJ Gruber, thank you so much for giving us some time here. Dean Jacob coming up in about 10 minutes, Marion Community Foundation, to talk about the Marion Made campaign and the Cardinals. It's going to be a lot of fun. Stay tuned. And from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, Mr. McFeely.
If there's anything.